What is OCD? OCD stands for Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. It's a childhood disorder in that it often happens when kids who are even as young as 2 years old, sometimes 4 years old, can begin to have early symptoms, 6 years old, and a lot of teenagers have OCD. It's an anxiety disorder, but the parents often don't see the anxiety in OCD. How would you know if your child has OCD or the beginnings of OCD? And if it did seem that way, what could you do about it? We're going to look at the symptoms of what OCD is and what OCD is not to help you decide whether it's possible that your child is in the OCD spectrum. And I say possible because you won't be able to do a complete diagnosis yourself. A proper diagnosis of OCD is difficult to make, actually, and requires an experienced professional in the mental health field, somebody who regularly works with OCD and does know what it is and what it isn't. But in order to know whether even to take your child for such an assessment to see, you know, if there is a disorder and what to do about it, you really have to be able to recognize the symptoms and to differentiate those symptoms from regular childhood behavior. You know, kids are weird, so they have a lot of symptoms that concern us or worry us, or let's not call it symptoms, but behaviors that are, you know, a little bit strange. For example, normal childhood rituals have an obsessive bent to them. There's children who, you know, they're very particular about their bedtime routine. It has to be just like this and just like that, and don't deviate it from, you know, 1 inch. And, you know, it may look like the child has a disorder, but really the child is a typical four-year-old who uses rituals for comfort. Young children, particularly between the ages of 3 and 6, you know, have a lot of little rituals that they do. And maybe older kids have, you know, little habits, routines, or items that they consider to be lucky items to help them cope with test anxiety or, you know, trying out for a music team or something. So, you know, it's not unusual for people to have their little ways of reducing their anxiety. And the question is, when is somebody's little way just their little way, and when is it the beginnings of a real disorder? So childhood rituals, normally the intense rituals of needing things to be put just in such a certain way, needing 3 kisses and not 4 and not 2, but exactly 3 and all that stuff, often just disappears on its own by the time a child is 5 or 6 years old. So in kids who are having a lot of rituals when they're a little bit older, we might have some concern. Also, even in the younger group, if the ritual seems to be helping them calm down, relax, get ready for bed, or get ready for some other stressful event in their lives, that's great. The ritual is being helpful. When the ritual is provoking a lot of anxiety, that is stress and, you know, turmoil, when the child is actually panicking if the ritual isn't done the right way, that's a little bit more concerning and, again, might point to the department of OCD. But we have to say a lot more about that before we're going to get too concerned. It's just really here to be alert to, is the ritual helping or is it hurting? Because OCD rituals, that is behaviors that a child uses to quell the anxiety that's found in OCD, those behaviors and rituals tend to be anxiety-provoking. They lead to panic and distress, whereas normal childhood rituals are calming and reduce the distress. Now, what if your child worries a lot? Is that the same as OCD? Well, it's true that OCD does have worry as a component, but the type of worry in OCD is quite different than the type found in regular childhood worry or even childhood generalized anxiety disorder called GAD, G-A-D. GAD is the disorder of worriers, people who really worry about everything that could be worried about. So the little kids will worry about, you know, what's going to happen tonight and what's going to happen tomorrow night. And if mommy's 5 minutes late, you know, does that mean that she's in a ditch and is, you know, something terrible happened? Or, you know, if we can't afford a big vacation this year, well, then, are we going to starve? What's going to be? What's going to happen? The worrier really worries. And if a child worries excessively, maybe that child has generalized anxiety disorder. But the worries that we find in obsessive compulsive disorder are not worries about everyday circumstances and what's going to be. Rather, they are worries that are about serious, really terrifying issues like serious illness, death, humiliation, something, you know, terrible happening. So the OCD worried child is really more terrorized than worried. And interestingly, the OCD child may not tell anybody about those worries. So the worried child, as in GAD, generalized anxiety disorder, is obviously worrying, and he goes around talking about all those worries all the time, always asking about things. But the child with OCD may not even mention those worries unless you start asking the child, well, why do you keep lining things up that way? Or why does it have to be that all the pillows are fluffed up just that way on the couch? Occasionally, a child will say, because if I don't do it this way, somebody in the family will get sick. You know, but that's not the most common thing. That a child might tell you, but she might not tell you. Okay, so children can have rituals, and they can have worries. And let's say they could be religious. Okay, so I want to mention that because in OCD, there's something called, one of the symptoms of OCD could be religious scrupulosity, which means that the person is using religion in an obsessive way in order to reduce anxiety. And we would want to differentiate that between a kid who's just really getting into his religion, and especially religion like Judaism, which has so many rituals that a person could get into, and so many halachic details, all the laws of Judaism pertaining to what we eat and what we can do on the Sabbath and what we can't do and what we can wear. And like this, you know, it's kind of like a dream world for somebody with obsessions, because at least with compulsions, that is, behaviors that they want to do exactly right, because there's so many rules and regulations in some religions, and you know, particularly in ours. So a person could just be getting into a more observant mode, wanting to be a better Jew, for example, or whatever religion they're in, wanting to practice it with more detail and more precision. How do we know if the person's just doing that, or, again, if illness is behind their increased religious observance? Again, one of the telltale signs is that anything that we're doing in a healthy way tends to make us more healthy, whereas when it's coming out of a disorder, we tend to get more disordered. So if somebody has recently discovered the beauty of their religion and wants to get into it more and more, and they're doing it in this healthy way, they may be more observant of the rituals, but they're also going to be functioning better. They're going to, let's say, have more community participation, more social life, more fulfilling relationship with God, more happiness, more calm, or something. Everything's going to be better, not worse. Whereas a person who is using religion in order to ward off being bad, you know, the fear of failing in God's eyes, or the fear of being sinful, and these are kinds of underlying thoughts under the obsessions involved in religious scrupulosity. The religious observance would be the behavior or the ritual, and the obsession might be, which is, obsession is a thought, right? A thought or a belief. So the obsession might be, I'm not good enough. And if I don't do this religious thing this way, then, you know, something terrible will happen to me. I'm going to be terribly, terribly punished, or maybe my family will be punished. So the person becomes more observant of the details and everything, but they actually become more disturbed, more anxious, more fearful. And usually the kind of ritualistic observance they're doing is going to take so much time, because they're doing it in a way that nobody else in the world is doing it. They're praying for hours and hours, or being very careful about the words and how they say each word, so that it ends up taking inordinate amount of time. The result is that the child isn't doing well in school, or isn't making it to school, or isn't able to participate in the family the way a regular child should. Things are going wrong, and that's how we can differentiate between newly religious enthusiasm and OCD as a disorder. Now there's a category of anxiety that's called phobia. And phobia is a specific fear of something. And sometimes OCD looks like it consists of specific fears, like a person has a fear of, let's say, doorknobs. Okay, now, it's interesting because in regular phobias, the things that a person is afraid of are things that actually have some inherent danger. People are phobic of dogs. Well, dogs can bite and they can really hurt you. People are phobic of needles. Yes, needles can cause pain. They're phobic of heights. That's right, because people fall off ladders or fall off edges and they can break their necks and, you know, it can be dangerous. People are phobic, let's see, what else are we phobic of? I don't know. All sorts of bugs. And there's a million phobias, but what we say is that nobody is phobic of the floor, for example. If a person has a very bad reaction to the floor, it could be because of a traumatic association. Maybe a person was injured or molested or hurt on the floor. But people don't develop a phobia of things that have no inherent danger. So let's look at the doorknob situation. Well, it may look like a child with OCD is avoiding touching doorknobs because he has a doorknob phobia, but that's not what's going on. Because doorknobs are not inherently dangerous, right? If a child is avoiding certain objects in OCD, it's because the object has some OCD-related problem. Like doorknobs, for example, may be dirty and cause germs. And if a child has a fear of germs, of getting ill, of dying, or of passing those germs on to other family members so that the other family member gets ill or might die, heaven forbid, then the child avoids the object or is afraid of the object because of what it can lead to in that way. So though there's some similarity maybe on the surface about what it looks like, the child with OCD is not having a phobia. He's having a phobia can cause a lot of fear, like panic attack and everything. A kid who's really afraid of something, you know, can get quite panicky. And we see that same behavior in OCD as well. But the reasons for it are different, okay? Let's look also at nervous habits, because some nervous habits are a little reminiscent of, well, compulsions, you know, like a compulsive habit is a word that we might use. The child is biting his nails compulsively. This does not mean that it's compulsive like the compulsions in OCD. OCD, the initials stand for obsessive. Obsessive means, refers to the obsessions actually in OCD, which are the worries and the fears, which I mentioned before are serious fears of illness and death and all that stuff, and compulsions, which are the behaviors and the rituals. So nail biting looks like a compulsion because people do it compulsively, right? Or knuckle cracking or maybe nose picking or whatever the child is doing. He seems to be unable to stop it. But really, it's just a habit, and it doesn't have the purpose. The child does not engage in nail biting in order to save his family member, whereas he may engage in arranging the pillows a certain way or turning all the magazines face up so that nobody will get hurt. Okay, it's the obsession that is driving the compulsion in OCD. That is an underlying worry that something terrible will happen unless the behavior is performed. With nervous habits, usually we're just trying to reduce our tension, and we do them rather mindlessly. We're not doing them to prevent something. We don't bite our nails so that we will pass the examination. The child bites his nails, because he's nervous about the test, but he doesn't have the thought that biting the nails will save him from harm or cause him to pass the test or anything like that. Although superstitious behavior also looks compulsive sometimes, but again, it's not the same at all. There's other illnesses that are similar to nervous habits. Let's say trichotillomania, which is the specific habit of pulling one's hair out, which could be eyebrows or eyelashes or the hair on one's head. Again, trichotillomania is not done to prevent some problem. It's more like a nervous habit in the sense that it's done mindlessly when a person feels stressed. Eating disorders also look like they have an obsessive side, bulimia and anorexia nervosa, where the person is obsessed with their weight and their body image, and they engage in all sorts of ritualistic eating patterns and behaviors. But in those cases, in the case of eating disorders, everything centers around food and body image and weight, and that's it. Whereas in the rituals of OCD, which we're going to look at in just a moment, the rituals have to do with all sorts of behaviors and nothing specifically to do with food, weight, body image, that sort of thing. So it's really that the issue is different in OCD, although similar, and those two disorders, eating disorders and OCD, often occur together, as a matter of fact, and probably have some biological commonality underlying them, but they are not the same disorder. There's also something called obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, and that is not OCD, although it kind of is reminiscent. Certainly the name of the disorder is reminiscent, but the behavior is quite different. OCD has to do with worries, that is, obsessions, and compulsions, behaviors that undo the worry. And there's always those two components, a fear and something that's designed to make the fear calm down or go away. With obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, even if the person is doing something that looks OCD-ish, they're doing it because it's part of their personality, not designed to make the fear go away. So somebody with this disorder is usually a person who he's preoccupied with the details, he makes a lot of lists, he follows a lot of rules, he keeps things in order. He's keeping things in order not so that something bad won't happen. He's keeping things in order because he likes to keep things in order. It's a little bit different. Also, there's a controlling aspect to a person with obsessive-compulsive personality disorder where things need to be their way. And again, that's part of the personality, whereas the controlling behaviors we see with OCD, because a child with OCD can be very demanding and very controlling, but he's doing so out of panic that if things don't happen the way he needs them to, something terrible, terrible will happen. So he's really quite alarmed. So that's a difference there as well. Let me just see if there's any other. Well, okay, there may be other disorders that look similar as well. There are certain things that tic disorders is another one where a person has to move their head a certain way or blink their eyes or engage in some vocal thing. A tic or a vocal and motor tics together are called Tourette's syndrome. Again, may be related to OCD. It certainly occurs frequently with that disorder. But it's a separate disorder, and it's interesting, but in OCD, the compulsion or ritual is something that the person wants to do. The child wants to do the compulsion because it makes the bad feeling go away. So let's say it's a kid who just needs to check to see if he locked the door, and he needs to check and check and check and check. He wants to do that checking because he's got this anxiety that if the door isn't locked, you know, if he forgot, then something terrible will happen. Whereas a person with a tic does not want to blink their eyes or make that noise with their throat, whatever it is. It just happens. A tic is a biological disorder, and it can't be stopped. It's not like the person has a choice. He can delay the tic. If it's kind of like having an itch or something, that just eventually has to be scratched. Maybe it's not exactly like that, but what I'm saying is it's a biological process. The tic will come. It's an energy that's going to be released at some point. Whereas a person who wants to do a ritual can actually learn to refrain from doing the ritual, and that is the basis of the treatment for OCD. Well, what is OCD? Let's just take a look at that. The O in OCD stands for obsessions. Obsessions are thoughts, images, feelings, or urges, something that goes on inside the mind. We can't see the obsessions of OCD. We can't see what our child is thinking or worrying about or terrified of. But the feelings are there. A common obsession that children experience is the fear that they or their family members are going to get sick or will die. And that obsession may be tied to the fear of contamination, which we talked about earlier, that touching things may have germs and that may lead to illness and all sorts of things. Obsessions actually come in many different flavors. Some kids are worried about doing something that's very embarrassing or something that is forbidden, something that's wrong or displeasing to God. There are specific obsessions about specific illnesses like AIDS or cancers and so on, obsessions about particular body functions, particular rituals, religious rituals, appearance, numbers, words, sounds and animals. There are obsessions that are about the just so feeling, that things need to be just so. The socks need to be pulled up just so, the gloves need to feel just so, and so on. In order for obsessions to be considered part of a syndrome called OCD, they actually have to cause a lot of anxiety or distress to the child. They have to be disturbing. As I said earlier, I think we all have some obsessions. We think about things over and over. But if that thinking process is going to cause us to take drastic measures to do something to make it go away, then it's in the department of an OCD obsession. Now, the letter C in OCD stands for compulsions. Compulsions are not inside the head. They are actions, behaviors that we can see. Another name for compulsions is rituals. So these are steps that a child will do to make the anxiety go away, to calm himself down. A compulsion can involve actions, words, or mental processes like thoughts. So there are some compulsions, in fact, that we can't see because they're going on inside the child's head, but it's an action that the child is taking. For example, those compulsions that involve counting, that may be silent, or praying may be silent, or saying certain words and phrases, all those may be silent compulsions. A lot of the compulsions in OCD are visible. So a child may wash his hands repeatedly or take a shower that, instead of lasting 10 minutes, lasts an hour, and the child has trouble getting out of the shower. Those are behaviors that we can see. Now, OCD, the D stands for disorder, and OCD is a disorder when it interferes with the child's life or when it causes extreme distress. Okay, when we're treating OCD and hoping to get an effective cure for the child, we don't mean that the child will never feel, will never have obsessions again and will never feel the urge to engage in a compulsion. What we mean is that whatever is left of obsessions and compulsions really doesn't interfere anymore. It doesn't cause a lot of stress, and it doesn't stop the child from living a full and active and appropriate lifestyle. So that's what we mean by cure of OCD, even though some of the little tendencies may be left. A person who's an adult, let's say with anxiety, doesn't have an anxiety disorder unless the person can't sleep at night, can't function during the day, is miserable, is really in a lot of emotional distress, and or can't hold down a job, can't do their responsibilities at home because of this anxiety. Okay, then it's a disorder. Most of us have some anxiety, you know, some of the time. We're anxious about the state of affairs in the world, about all kinds of things going on in the family. It's not a disorder unless it interferes with our ability to function or it causes us extreme stress. So we want to keep that in mind with the OCD as well. Now, there's lots of different compulsions, different flavors of behaviors that a person can do to calm themselves down. And here are the most, let's say, popular ones or common ones. Ordering things. That involves putting them in a certain lineup or having them in a certain order, any kind of order, alphabetical or by height or whatever it is. It has to be very precise. And when the child has put the things in the right order, he feels a safety and a good feeling. And if they're out of order, there's a panic and a terror that can set in. Cleaning compulsions are excessive washing of the person, him or herself, so the child can, like I said, shower for lengthy periods of time or wash hands for long, long periods of time, or can wash objects, property, you know, books, clothes, toys, counters, beds, clothing, anything, any surface can be washed. And people who engage in that kind of thing usually find a variety of ways to do that washing. It's not necessarily just water or not just soap and water, but it can be using all sorts of chemicals and cleaning agents and alcohol and a lot of toxic stuff in order to make sure that the surface or the body is free of contamination. There are checking rituals where the person keeps looking to confirm something, like we talked about, checking the doors to make sure they're locked, or checking outlets to make sure all the plugs are out and everything is safe. But checking can involve checking the homework over and over again, just making sure to see if it's done or if it was done properly, checking to see if shoes are in the cupboard where they're supposed to be. Checking has to do with the obsession or the worry that the person maybe forgot something or forgot to do something or misplaced something or made some sort of error. So, and then that would be disastrous, extremely embarrassing or humiliating or problematic in some way. So the person just checks and checks. Now there's also repeating and tapping rituals, as a tapping or other kinds of touching. These involve doing something again until the feeling is right. So it may be that the person needs to take a certain number of steps. That actually, steps is, would be just a counting ritual, but maybe three times, you know, back up and start again, back up and start again, go through the doorway again, go out and come back in again in order to repeat it to get the right feeling. Or touching the doorway as you're going through it, or touching the door of the car, when you get out of it, walking around the car and tapping it on all the windows. There's certain kinds of touching and tapping things that seem to, they look like superstitious behaviors that are meant to ward off bad energies or evil energies, but they are actually OCD rituals. Okay, there are hoarding rituals where the child cannot give something away even though it's broken or destroyed or useless. The child may not be able to give it up because of a fear that something terrible will happen if he doesn't have it. There are mental and verbal encounting rituals, which we've really looked at already, just needing to say certain words or count to certain numbers or have certain numbers work out. For example, a child may have to take a route home from school that involves walking a certain number of blocks that's divisible by 3 or by 2. And he can't take the other way because it's not divisible by 3 or by 2, whatever it is. Like, a lot of arithmetic calculations can become obsessions. There's ruminations, which is a mental ritual of thinking and discussing and philosophizing and working things through, which not only drives the person kind of crazy himself, but also annoys other people when it's done out loud and other people are involved in that calculation, that discussion, that philosophical exploration. It can be just endless and seemingly pointless. Religious scrupulosity is based on the obsession, the fear that doing something wrong will have disastrous spiritual effects, and so the person becomes obsessed with the details of religious practice. Now, there's more rituals than these, but these are some of the top, you know, 10, let's say, the popular ones. And a child finds doing the rituals very stressful. So so what the child often does is try to avoid being in the situation where rituals have to be performed. If you don't touch the doorknob, then you don't have to wash your hands for half an hour. So kids learn not to touch the doorknob and to have other people open and close that door for them. And this is why family members get so heavily involved with the OCD child, where they're doing all sorts of things for the child just so the child can get out the door in the morning or get back into bed at night or whatever. And they mean well, but really what they are doing, as we'll soon see, is they are prolonging the child's illness. So we want to learn as parents to, you know, how we can help and how we can avoid hurting the child's development. And especially when there's OCD involved, we want to be careful not to contribute to the spread of obsessions and rituals. The thing is that when a child doesn't confront the fear, then he ends up having all these rituals and compulsions spreading. They grow. It's not, you know, maybe you had to wash your hands for 10 minutes at one point, but now it's 20 minutes, and now it's 30 minutes, and now it's an hour. So that's how it tends to go unless you stop it. So the treatments for OCD involve letting the, actually rewiring the brain. I'm going to explain that in a minute, but let's just look at why OCD happens to begin with. OCD is not an emotional illness. It's not, the child does not have emotional problems. It's not caused by poor parenting and things like that. OCD is a brain glitch. Something goes on in the brain. And we find that OCD tends to travel through family trees. It seems to be genetically passed on. Except there's a vulnerability in some people, probably genetic also, but to something called PANDAS, which stands for Pediatric Autoimmune Neuropsychiatric Disorder Associated with Streptococcal Infections. It's a big word, but it means that after getting strep, some children end up with an OCD syndrome. So that's one way to get OCD. But in fact, antibiotic treatment usually decreases OCD brought on by PANDAS, although sometimes we need specific OCD treatment as well. But most OCD actually happens just developmentally. At some point, a child develops symptoms of OCD. And parents can help nip OCD in the bud by helping the child to face those feelings right away instead of developing rituals. The sooner we get on to treating OCD, the easier and less painful it is for the child, because it's just a simpler case. The longer the child has OCD, the more complex obsessions and rituals he will have developed. So treatment involves finding a way to fix the glitch in the brain. What I mean by glitch is that think of OCD as a kettle of boiling water that when the off switch goes off, somehow the kettle doesn't read the signal and it keeps boiling. So there's a fear and there's a terror signal that happens inside the brain about something. And even though the child has gone to address the fear, for example, did I turn the stove off or did I leave it on when I was about to leave the house? So for all of us, we'll go and see if the stove is off and then we'll sigh a big sigh of relief. Oh, I turned it off. And then we'll be fine after that. But for the OCD brain, even though we had that reassurance, the kettle keeps boiling, so to speak. The anxiety keeps running. So the child has to do something more. Go back again and again and again, attempting to turn off that anxiety. The only way to really fix this situation, using the kettle metaphor some more, is to let the kettle boil dry. That is, to go see that the stove is the kettle is, I have to get my metaphor right here. The off switch went, but the kettle's still boiling in the OCD brain. So if we use the stove analogy here, we think that we left the stove on. We go and check. We see that it's off, and then we don't do anything else. So now in the OCD brain, the terror is still running, like the water is still boiling. But interestingly, feelings can only last a certain amount of time. So it'll run and it'll run and it'll run through the kid's body, and then it will run out, like the water in the kettle will boil out eventually. And when it runs out, the brain is changed. So all OCD cognitive behavioral therapies work on this principle that it's important for the child not to check again or not to do any ritual, because the ritual stops the kettle from boiling out. And that means, if we stop the anxiety temporarily, we're going to have it again and again and again because it's still in the system, it's still in the brain. We want that anxiety to boil out, so to speak. There's therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy called ERPA, E-R-P-A, which stands for exposure, response prevention, and awareness. So it's E-R-P-A. Exposure means going and facing the fear, like touching that doorknob, even though you believe that the doorknob is somehow harmful. So that's called exposure. It's the opposite of avoidance, where we get somebody else to open the door, or we wear 10 pairs of gloves before we open the door, or we use our feet or our elbows to open the door. Instead of doing all that, we actually open the door with our hand. Now, the result of that will be a lot of terror running through the OCD brain. So the next step is response prevention, or ritual prevention. So normally the child might wash and wash and wash and clean and who knows what, but we're going to have the child not do that and let the terror keep running, running, running until it boils out of the system. The A in IRPA stands for awareness of that feeling, to pay attention to the anxiety and to just let it be, to watch it and to let it pass through. So cognitive behavioral treatment has been shown to be very effective for OCD. It really does change what the brain is doing. It makes an OCD brain closer to a normal functioning brain. IRPA is a treatment that is difficult for the child to do because the child is full of terror while doing that treatment. Therefore, it helps to have a professional mental health person who is specifically trained in designing programs for children with OCD, who can supervise or construct a program and send it home with the parents to help supervise it at home and to have sessions in therapeutic settings as well, so that the child can practice the skills that he seems to need. And sometimes, in cases of severe OCD, medication will be helpful to reduce the anxiety enough so that the child can actually do the IRPA program. Because if a child is too afraid, then he can't even do the program. So sometimes medication is helpful. Many times medication is not necessary. Alternative treatments can be useful, or even using nothing. But alternative treatments sometimes take the edge off of anxiety as well. For example, if you consult a professional herbalist, you might be able to get the equivalent of an anti-anxiety drug without the drug part of it in a form of a lollipop or a tea, depending on the age of the person we're dealing with, that can reduce anxiety in the system and then make the IRPA treatment easier to bear. Or learning energy psychology techniques like EFT, emotional freedom technique, or there's something called WHEE, which is very very easy for children to use. Both of these techniques, you can look them up on the internet. There's something called schoolmademucheasier.com, or there's emofree.com. Those techniques explore the EFT treatment, and there's holistichealingresearch.com, which explores the use of WHEE, and holistic is spelt with a W as well, holistichealingresearch.com. So those sites can lead you to learn a little bit about techniques the child can use to calm down during IRPA and before IRPA, to make the treatment much more comfortable. Also, Bach flower therapy, another alternative treatment, B-A-C-H for Bach, is one way to help a child feel calmer and more confident and less anxious, again, overall, and also specifically for the IRPA treatment. And it's a harmless, it's not even herbal, it's hard to explain. It's a vibrational kind of medicine, they call it, but it's not really medicine. It's harmless enough that babies and nursing mothers and pregnant women can all use it safely. And it may help the child, you know, feel more able to handle the IRPA treatment. So, I think it is nice to look into these things to make the treatment a little bit more comfortable, because it is hard for the child to go through it. But the child must go through it, and the parents must be on board. Because, again, we don't want to accidentally help the child's OCD to get worse. And when we help the child to avoid the things that he's afraid of, and when we let him continue with his rituals and we sort of cater to his fear, we're actually not just leaving him as he is, but we're worsening his condition, and we're worsening the condition of his brain. So parents definitely have to be on board. There's a lot of good books now for children, for parents of children with OCD. You can ask the librarian or the owner of a children's bookstore, or check online. There's many, many useful materials, not just for the parents, but also for kids now, because it's just become much more recognized how common OCD really is in today's children. So There's picture books for children of the younger ages, and there's informationally based good books for teenagers, and I just recommend you take a look. They won't be hard to find. So that's all we'll say for now with looking at children with OCD. If you think that your child may have some symptoms, it's a great idea to get an assessment and get some direction and ward it off at the pass. Okay.